Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, Nick Sirianni doesn't want to see the banner. Plus, Aiden Hutchinson talks Packers, Ian Rappaport talks restaurants, and is Najee Harris really going to play in Brazil? That's coming up next. Let's do a show, everybody. Welcome to Inside Coverage here on yahoosports.tv. We are here at 6:30 Eastern Time every Monday through Thursday, and we are here now to celebrate week one of the National Football League season. It is finally here. Your long national nightmare is over. You enjoy Labor Day weekend. Doing fantasy drafts and watching college football and overanalyzing Arch Manning's debut in the Texas loss at Columbus to Ohio State. And finally now is whether you watch on YouTube or the Fast Channel or wherever you watch this program, you are ready, Frank Schwab, 2 days from now for the opening of a scheduled 272 regular season games, season 105 of the NFL. With the Cowboys, without Micah Parsons, by the way, since last you and I spoke, and the Philadelphia Eagles. Good to see you, man.
Good seeing you, my friend. And it was a weird feeling today. Like, I've been on a roller coaster of emotions, got up today. I was like, it's week one. Let's go. I'm so excited. And then I'm like, oh, it seems so far away. We have like 52 hours now. We're about 50 hours from kickoff. I'm just as, you know, I just wanted to get here. I just want to see kickoff. I just want to see some games back in my life.
You see, I was exactly the opposite because I'm so used over the years to doing a show on Labor Day Monday, right? You have your Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, then you're in the studio on Monday doing a show. There may be nobody watching, right? But you're there doing a show. I woke up today going, well, number one, I'm grateful for the day off on Monday. But number two, oh, wow, it's Tuesday. This isn't Monday. Your work week, because we all get into the same rhythm during the NFL work week. It's Groundhog's Day. My work week is now accelerated because you spent Monday at the beach. I did, having a beer and talking to friends and, you know, having a good time. And now you're like, oh, wow, okay, hurry up, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. I just, again, like, kickoff can't get here quick enough. I've done all my fantasy drafts, maybe made some futures bets. Who knows? Who's to say, Andrew? But I just want to see kickoff. Like, I am so ready for it, as I'm sure every single person listening is, because this is what we do. We wait. The last NFL football that mattered that we saw, Cooper DeJean was running back a pick six against Patrick Mahomes. It seems like six lifetimes ago by now, this offseason has been so long.
As we sit here right now, we are 49 and a half hours away from kickoff on a brand new season. We will talk Cooper DeJean coming up and whether or not he's going to be starting and where, because Nick Sirianni wouldn't say anything about that today when he was on the podium 2 days away from kickoff. We'll get to that in a second. We open this Inside Coverage, however, on a Tuesday before the kickoff opener by talking to an old friend, a guy that I used to talk to every single day, it seemed, that I also had to put up with his awkward Snapchats and Instagram videos, but we'll save that for later. He is the insider of insiders. He works nonstop. He is the master of social media. He is also a world traveler, or maybe only domestic this year. I'm not sure. Ian Rappaport, the hell are you?
World travel. We went to Mexico. Okay. I'm good, man. How are you? Good to hear from you.
Likewise. Did you do like Pujol and everything, all the good ones in Mexico City?
We did not do Mexico City. We did Mayacoba, which was amazing. We went to the cenotes, we drank a lot of tequila and mezcal. It was everything you would hope for, just to be totally honest. We had a great time. And now it's, you know, it's football season. That all seems like a very, very far away memory.
No, I get it. I did Japan and France, and I did Israel for a few minutes. What was the best meal you had in the off season?
Ooh, the best meal I had in the off season. I would say we went to Daniel Boulud's steakhouse in New York City.
Nice.
And I got the prime rib trolley. And then I got to go in the kitchen and hang out with him for probably like a half hour and talk food and inspiration. And it let me flip some steaks. And that was about as cool as it gets. So I was pretty psyched about that.
Yeah, that is cool. Well, now it's all over, and now we talk about football.
Now it's all over, yes.
That's a first-world problem. All right, let's talk about the Cowboys' first-world problems. Micah's probably going to play this week for the Packers, which sounds odd to say. David Mulugeta was on ESPN this morning. He tried to unpack their side of it. He's Micah's agent, obviously, agent to the Stars. And then you have the ESPN article, which suggests that after Micah and Jerry did have their one-on-one conversation months ago, that Micah called Steven and asked for more money, and the article alleges that they added more money. Obviously, look, here's where we sit now. From how you understand it all went down, where was the true disconnect?
I mean, that was the disconnect because, you know, David Mulugeta is as good an agent as it gets in the NFL. He's one of the best, if not the best. I've known him for, you know, 13 years. He would never have his client negotiate a contract without being there. As Mulugeta said today, Micah is a 25-year-old superstar linebacker, defensive lineman, whatever he is. He is not a lawyer and he is not an agent. And I think the disconnect came with Micah feeling like, you know, did he engage in conversations that he thought were theoretical? Yeah. But to think that he was negotiating his contract was, you know, something that he felt like the Cowboys tried to take advantage of him. And, you know, agreeing to terms with a player who was not ready to negotiate, who didn't know the market, who didn't know the numbers, who didn't know the timing, who didn't know the nuances of a contract, why 4 years is better than 5 years. I mean, all those things, you know, It left Micah Parsons feeling like the Cowboys tried to pull one over on him. That was hard to come back from. That was really hard to come back from. And in the end, they never came back from there. I mean, Jerry Jones felt like the negotiations were finished. Micah Parsons felt like the negotiations were just getting started, and they could never bridge that gap.
All right, let's get to what you reported, which is that Micah does have a legit back injury, even though Schottenheimer last week said that he's medically cleared to play, at least in the Cowboys' eyes, not that their eyes matter right now. You said, Ian, that he might need an epidural and that Dr. Watkins, who does everyone's neck and back here in L.A., also my former doctor, who once told me I needed an epidural, and I got that epidural, and it hurt like you know what, but you're saying that he may need that to play. Did the Packers know that?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, the Packers knew everything. I mean, remember, The timing of it, he went to go see Dr. Watkins one day before the trade. You know, I would say in any other situation, this would be called back soreness. And I think he's going to be fine, back tightness, whatever it is. Just, you know, sometimes it's important to get the specifics out there.
All right, talking to Ian Rappaport here from NFL Network. Last year, we had the Dak Prescott contract announced on Sunday morning before the Cowboys played the Browns in Cleveland. That was as late a deal as I think we could all remember getting done. Forget about the Cowboys nor the Packers. Are we sitting on any other of those deals? Like, could there be, we're sitting here talking on Tuesday night, some kind of mega deal, Aiden Hutchinson maybe, or anybody between now and kickoff?
You know, Tyler Smith and Aiden Hutchinson would probably be the two to keep an eye on there. Two top of the market players. I mean, Aiden probably would have been top of the market if not for Micah. I don't think he's going to eclipse Micah now, but, you know, does he get to 43, 44? Maybe. He certainly deserves it. He is a great player. And so that's sort of, you know, those two and Tyler Smith, you know, an all-pro guard who would, you know, almost certainly be top of the guard market. I mean, those are two to keep an eye on. The Cowboys may beat the buzzer again. They may do a deal Wednesday or Thursday for Tyler Smith. Certainly that's something that, you know, we're going to be keeping our eyes on. But I think those are probably the guys to watch.
There's only one unsigned draft pick that doesn't have a deal. That's Quinshon Judkins. Mary Kay Cabot dropped something over the weekend that suggested he might be here this week. It's Tuesday night and nobody sees him. Hey, what's going on there, man?
Yeah, I mean, if that is the case, and, you know, Mary Kay has done this for a long time and is a Hall of Famer and excellent, she knows more than I do. As far as I have heard, I have not sensed momentum there. I mean, the last I had heard, unless the offers change, I don't know that Quinshon Judkins does a deal until and unless the NFL basically weighs in on what it feels about his allegations of domestic violence before the season, during the offseason. I think if there was a resolution there, they'd probably be able to do a deal. I just, you know, I haven't sensed it. Maybe it's possible. I just have not sensed it.
What is the one storyline that isn't getting enough attention? as we sit here getting ready for Philly, getting ready for Brazil, a full schedule week one, and we've exhausted every single offseason topic. Is there something we're overlooking ahead of week one?
Matthew Stafford's back injury is probably, even though we've touched it on TV, we've talked about it, but that's a team that defense might be, I don't know if they'll be the best, but they'll be in the conversation. Stafford's a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback who has won a Super Bowl. Like, if his back holds up, they're going to be really good. If it doesn't, it's going to be a challenge. I think that's probably one of them. How some of the new quarterbacks exist with their new team. The Vikings went to the playoffs last year and have J.J. McCarthy, who no one's ever seen. How he holds up, how good is he? That's a huge storyline for me as well. I think those are a couple of the storylines that, certainly bear watching.
And finally, as somebody that used to cover Bill Belichick every day, your thoughts on last night?
That was terrible.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know what we all expected, though. He is the greatest coach of all time, and I don't think anything's going to change that. But he's basically building a program from scratch, so it takes a little bit. I think we all want to wave a wand and have it go, but even Bill Belichick needs some time. I hope he's obviously older. I hope he gets time though. Because I like Bill. I'd like to see him succeed. I'd like to see UNC succeed in what certainly is a good place for football. I just don't know that the world was ready for it taking more than a game or two, honestly.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, is that the world was ready. And I always remind people on Twitter, when I talk to college kids or journalism school classes, whatever, snark is not analysis. And last night, everybody was ready to pounce. The dancing on the man's grave last night it was a little bit over the top. I kind of backed away from the keyboard and went, guys, whatever. I know this is getting out of hand, and this team clearly didn't want to tackle in the second half.
Yeah, in-game tweets are generally really bad, just almost to a...
Yeah.
Almost without exception. I think that was a good reason not to be tweeting during games.
I totally agree. But you should be tweeting during the Insiders at 7 o'clock Eastern time every day, Monday through Friday, on NFL Network with Mike Garofolo and the shirt jacket loving Tom Pelissero, 7 p.m. Eastern time every day on NFL Network. And game day morning coming up on Sunday as well. Thanks. Yep. Thanks for being Carpool Dad and doing this as well. Good to talk to you. Have a great year, my friend.
No problem, man. Great to talk to you as well.
Ian Rappaport, everybody. Frank, and yes, Tom Pelissero shirt jacket. A tradition now, truly, unlike any other at 7 o'clock Eastern time. All right, a lot to unpack there. I want to go back to the Cowboys thing with Micah Parsons. Ian's story, now it's the Packers thing. 5 yards on me for that. I'm going to do that a lot, I'm assuming. Ian reports that Micah might need an epidural to play, and he went to Dr. Watkins. For those who don't know, as mentioned, there's Dr. Watkins, the old man, and then Dr. Watkins Jr., and they're both here in Marina Del Rey, and they do every neck and back. And I wasn't joking. He was my doctor for my back or my neck injury earlier, and I did have an epidural. They hurt. The idea that the Packers traded for a guy that needs an epidural to play, to me, scares the you-know-what out of me. I just don't know, without questioning Ian's report, if I want to believe it's as serious as that sounds.
Yeah, from everything the internet doctors have told me over the last couple of days, it's going to be a pain management issue. It's not a herniated disc or anything like that. And Micah's a tough dude. I'm sure he's going to play through it. But, if his effectiveness is a little bit off, didn't really have any training camp, didn't have any preseason. He's dealing with a back injury. And now you're asked to go against, Penei Sewell, Taylor Decker, that line's offensive line. I know the interior line took some hits, but the tackles are still really good. And all eyes are going to be on him. Lions-Packers became one of the games of week one. And it's because of Micah Parsons, and everybody's going to be watching. Is he going to be able to play 60 snaps, 40 snaps? Is he going to be able to be at 100%, 90, 80? We just don't know any of these questions. And I think all the hoopla about the trade, which was one of the biggest trades of all time, we talked about that last week, we kind of lost the fact that, yeah, Mike actually does have an injury here. And like we've talked about with Stafford, it's not necessarily is he going to be on the field week one. He's a tough dude. He's going to play week one. I really have no doubts about that. I'd be stunned if he doesn't play. It's how effective is he, and also can he make it through the full season? He's not 37 years old like Matthew Stafford, but he plays a different position, and you're taking a lot of a beating. Is this going to affect him as the year goes on? I think that's something we're really going to have to watch.
Yeah, and I'm always honestly anxious for any player week one when they don't have a training camp or when they just get there this week and when a hold in or hold out ends. And for example, Mike Tomlin today said Cam Hayward is definitely going to be on the field for the Steelers. He's been at camp, though, and doing more than Micah Parsons. I just hold my breath for anyone, or not only for the player, but for the team, just for everyone involved, that you can get through that first game and you don't have a soft tissue injury or something more calamitous than that, not to be negative here. That, to me, is what I'm always anxious about week number one. Coming up next, we'll talk to Aiden Hutchinson, the man we just, you know, mentioned there with Ian. Is he going to get a deal done before week number one as we get ready for the Lions and the Packers? Don't go anywhere. You're watching Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage, everybody. Thank you for watching 6:30 Eastern Time every Monday through Thursday as we sit here today. Hi, my name is Andrew Frank Schwab. Second time I've done that now in as many shows here as well. Earlier, matter of fact, like a couple of days ago, before news, honestly, of the Micah Parsons trade dropped, I was able to sit down to a man coming off a horrible injury, a man who has his sights on a Defensive Player of the Year award, a man who will lead the Lions as he gets back on the field against the Packers coming up in week one. That man wears 97 in Detroit. Aiden Hutchinson joins Inside Coverage now on behalf of State Farm. Aiden, great to have you on, man. Thanks for doing this. It's year four, but it almost feels like year three, doesn't it? Like, can we just get a do-over on last year? How are you feeling heading into 2025?
Yeah, you know, it's last year came with a lot of silver linings, so I'm grateful for my experience, but I got all my eggs in this 2025 basket, and we are, I feel primed, I feel ready to go, and it's only a matter of time.
Physically, how are you feeling? Seriously, like joking aside, you haven't played a game yet. We've seen you in practice. Practice looks good, right? You feel good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel great. I feel great. I really, I have a lot of faith in my body, and I have a lot of, I put a lot into my recovery, so I think it all has paid off, and I'm really, really grateful for where I'm at, and you know, how I feel physically is, it's awesome.
You had said that you don't want to get back to the same level, that you actually want to recover, come back from that horrible injury and be better than you were before. Kelvin Shepard, your new DC, says from what he sees on the field, you are better already. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I'd say that would be the expectation. You know, I think, I'm still getting better every single year, and I just turned 25, so it's there's still more room for growth, still more room to hit that potential, you know. And I'm trying every day to learn how to do that and learn how to consistently get better. So yeah, again, that is the expectation every single year.
Did you lobby to play in the preseason?
Did I lobby to play in the preseason? No, because I'm not a big fan of preseason. So I don't mind sitting out of those games. I like when I put the pads on, when I throw my eye black on, I like to know it's the real deal.
Listen, there are some of us who sit back and say, like, what is Joe Burrow doing? Like, why does he want to play? And like, if we gave Zach Taylor truth serum, would he admit that, all right, he's making me play him? But I also appreciate the honesty from you and from others going, no, I don't want to play. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, you know, if I get a sack in the preseason, it's just, you get up to celebrate. It's not going to be, you know, it doesn't count at the end of the year. It's just, that's where I have my, my grievances with it.
I was watching a mic'd up today, a Joe Flacco. He threw a touchdown last week against the Rams to a rookie, Harold Fannin. Like, it was great for Harold Fannin, but Flacco's mic'd up and you just see him go like this.
That's a reasonable response right there.
It's like, I'm a man, I'm 40, it's the preseason. When do we get to the regular season? All right, let's back up. I want to talk about your new DC, Kelvin Shepard. How is he different from Aaron Glenn?
They are pretty different, you know. He is so fiery. I mean, one of the most intelligent coaches I've been around. Everything that he's about, I love, you know, and that's why we get along so well together. And I've been around him for the last few years now. So having him as the coordinator, we already have a really good rapport together. And I think me and all my teammates, we trust him.
He was the linebacker coach, and John Morton's been in the building before as well, obviously. But as I travel around the league and training camps, and I know you've heard this too, it's the thing that everyone's talking about, right? Hey, how does this team transition? I don't want to say recover, but transition to two new coordinators. Are you guys in the locker room kind of standing back going, hey, wait a minute, like we won 15 games, like we're okay. Like, don't forget about us. Like, all due respect to our coaches, like, don't think we're just dying over here.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, it's it's in the NFL, it's you can have a lot of coaches plugged in there, but at the end of the day, if you have those cornerstone foundational players, I think you're going to be all right. And from what I've seen our defense put on tape, I think we're elevated from last year. You know, we have the personnel that we brought in, the guys that we have coming back. I think we're all going to stay healthy this year, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, that's part of it too. All the pieces at the end were in pieces. I mean, that's what's amazing. And again, we're not making excuses here. That was last year. This is this year. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how you guys were able to get to 15-2, considering the way everything fell apart. It's a testament to everyone in that locker room. But you guys also know that momentum doesn't carry from last year into this year. So how do you start anew, knowing that you've been so close the last few years?
For sure. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the NFL is every single year, even if you have every single guy coming back, it's a little bit different, you know. And I think we're ready for that fresh new start, and ready to handle whatever adversity is thrown at us this season.
Dan Campbell says that you've been wrecking practice. There's a hutch rule. And for those who don't know, like, in practice, you can't sack the quarterback. So, like, you kind of blow the play dead if you were to get to Jared Goff. But Dan says that he's not blowing it dead because he has to give the offense a chance to take shots down the field because you're wrecking practice. Is that true? Is there a rule?
You know, I don't really know how this all happened. You know, I think Dan said something in the media, and then I think a reporter coined it as the hutch rule. I don't think Dan has ever said the hutch rule verbatim, but I think he did say a quote. But regardless, I think it's good to hear, and I think it's exactly where you want to be. I think I put myself in a good position headed into week one.
Are you the guy that like starts putting his hands up saying, hey, that's a sack, why are we still going? I was at a Eagles Browns joint practice, and like, it's Myles Garrett going after Jordan Mailata, and there were plays that kept going, and he's like, what are we doing here? This play's dead.
Yeah, you know, it can get a little frustrating, and then the quarterback will throw a touchdown and everybody will start celebrating, and you're like, wait, didn't the rush get a sack here? You know, and so it's yeah, man, it's funny. It's just, you know, that's why you take this time to get better, and that's ultimately what matters.
A couple of other quick things for you. Are you with me that not only should intentional groundings be called sacks, but that TFLs in the eyes of the media and the eyes of the stat keepers and the eyes of the people that figure out the awards, TFLs are just as important as sacks? Like, if you drop Aaron Jones in the backfield for a 6-yard loss, it's the same thing. You lost 6 yards.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing. Intentional groundings, I do believe, definitely should be a sack. I think, I believe they still are in college, because I think I've gotten a sack off of an intentional grounding. At least that's what it was a few years ago. And yeah, I don't know. I think this game places a heavy emphasis on sacking the quarterback, and sometimes those run stops, although they're not as glamorous, I think when you're stopping the run as a defense, that just opens up the ability to rush the passer. So I think it kind of coincides with getting sacks as well.
Yeah, if you drop a running back in the backfield, it's the same thing. You beat your guy, it's a loss, and it's a win. Yeah. They're behind the sticks. All right, let's talk about the Packers here. You guys swept them last year. I think you won up there the last 3 years. This is a divisional game to open it up, a huge divisional game. You guys have had some big games the last couple of years in the opener and some big TV spots. But how do you feel about a divisional game against the Packers here week one?
Yeah, it's definitely different. I don't think I've ever opened up with a divisional game.
You have not. I looked that up. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, I guess I'm right. Yeah, it's different, but it's fun. You know, you have that familiarity there with that in-season opponent. You kind of have an idea of their identity and what they do and what they're about. So, you know, you almost don't have to watch as much film because you already have a good idea of what they do and the guys you go up against. So it's going to be fun.
As you open up a new season, I'm thinking of Hard Knocks. You guys were on Hard Knocks 2 years ago. I'm watching the Bills this year on Hard Knocks, and there's this emotional moment where fans are talking about what it would mean to them if and when the Bills finally win. A lot of similarities between the fan bases and yeah, Rust Belt and Midwest here between these right. fan bases. As you guys have gotten so close, have you allowed yourself maybe while rehabbing or while stuck at a red light to imagine what that moment would be like and what it would mean for the city?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. I mean, being in that position after the game when the confetti's fallen, I think if you don't see yourself there, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, I think that's everybody's goal. That's what everybody wants. And I know with Dan and with the guys that we have, we're truly willing to do whatever it takes to get to that moment.
Aiden Hutchinson here on behalf of State Farm. Appreciate your time, man. Glad to see you back on the field and best of luck this coming year.
Thank you.
The Lions, and again, hi, Frank Schwab. That was recorded before the Micah Parsons trade. Not only swept the Packers last year, they have won 3 straight at Lambeau. They have never won 4 straight at Lambeau. They, back in the 50s, won 5 straight at Green Bay, but that's when they were playing at City Stadium.
Yeah.
So the Lions, and you're the Packers guy here, the Lions have a chance to do something that they have never done, but they have an amazingly high bar of winning 15 games a year ago and still falling short, much like the Bills, of making it to the Super Bowl. They are on a very short list of teams that it is truly Super Bowl or bust.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I love the interview with Aiden there because you started talking about, you asked him, he didn't take the bait that much, but he asked about, hey, doesn't the world remember we won 15 games last year?
Yeah.
And it's true. I think everybody has forgotten this Lions team went 15-2 last year without a ton of defensive players. And I even mentioned this briefly when we had our Micah Parsons reaction show last week. Yeah, the Packers should be happy. We got Micah Parsons. Here we come. We're better. The Lions are saying, yeah, we're getting Aiden Hutchinson. They didn't have him for 2/3 of the season last year, and their defense still finished top 5 in DVOA and other advanced stats and all that. They get a lot of guys back. I think they upgrade a corner, getting DJ Reed there after letting Carlton Davis sign elsewhere with the Patriots. I just think the disrespect for the Lions has been really strong. And even, you know, Ben Fox, our colleague on the betting side, wrote about how all the odds changed with the Micah Parsons trade. One thing that struck me was the Packers are now favored in the betting markets to win the NFC North. Like, are we totally forgetting that the Lions won 15 games last year with one of the deepest rosters we've seen in a really long time? Like, this was a really good team last year. They get healthy. They get Aiden Hutchinson back. They're going to catch the Packers at Lambeau at a good time. We talked about Micah Parsons, maybe not being Micah Parsons quite yet in week one. I don't know, Andrew. I have no reason to pick against the Lions to win the NFC North. This is a very good team that has been entirely disrespected all offseason.
I thought it was interesting there when he conceded that, yes, the players are kind of sick of the whole assistant coach narrative. I'm not making that up, Frank. I'm sure you've heard it as well. It's not just from other coaches around the league or other members of the media. It's from players. I've heard it from all corners, natural skepticism. And part of this is admiration for Ben Johnson as a play caller. Part of it certainly is admiration for Aaron Glenn. People forget it's not just Ben Johnson, the play caller. They had a pretty darn good defense as well in Aaron Glenn. And they think that that's really going to take a toll. I don't know the last time I heard a player or a locker room push back to say, we can survive a coordinator change, guys. Like, give us some credit here.
And I wonder how much of this is just it being the Lions. When this happened to the Eagles a couple of years ago, nobody made a peep about them losing Steichen and Gannon. Now, it did hurt them. And I don't want to disrespect Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. I have utmost respect for both of those guys. I think they're going to be great head coaches, but I've used this line before. It's not like the Lions are holding a raffle before the game and seeing which fan in Section 308 is going to call plays, okay? Like, John Morton has been around a long time. He just was with Sean Payton for a couple of years. He's with the Lions before that. He knows what he's doing on the offensive side. Defensive side, Kelvin Shepard. He'd been coaching under Glenn for 4 years. You don't think he learned some things from Aaron Glenn? Like, those guys are great coaches. They are great coordinators. I have not had a conversation all offseason with anybody about the Lions without the names Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn being brought up. And
absolutely,
usually we underrate the loss of coordinators. This time I think we're overrating it. Great coaches, I get that, but look at the roster. Penei Sewell's still there. He's still best lineman in football. Jared Goff is on autopilot at this point. He can go out and run John Morton's offense or anybody's offense at this point. Two great running backs, a couple great receivers, Aiden Hutchinson back at like, this team is stacked. It is loaded. And for them to be second behind the Packers and the odds for the NFC North, again, it's just blatant disrespect for the Lions. And I think it's probably because it's the Lions, because we think of the Lions as the team that's never won four straight times at Lambeau Field, never made a Super Bowl. This is a different Lions era. They're going to be just fine. I think they win week one at Lambeau Field to make some history of their own. And that sets a tone for the season. We're going to be talking about this during the season where we're like, we slept on the Lions too much in the offseason. This is still a very, very good team that won 15 games despite a slew of injuries last year.
All good points. Final thought here. I like the comparison there with the Eagles when they were coming off the Super Bowl in Phoenix, the Super Bowl appearance in Phoenix. They lost to the Chiefs. The idea that they lost both coordinators, you remember the coordinators that filled in for Steichen or stepped in, rather, for Steichen, and I'm drawing a blank on Arizona.
Jonathan Gannon was the other one.
Thank you, Jonathan Gannon. You just mentioned his name. Mm-hmm. They lasted a year, right? And then you had to reset again. Yeah. And then even through the first month of the season, a year ago in 2024, there were people circling at the Eagles' bye for Nick Sirianni's job. They barely survive. They barely beat the Browns coming back from the bye. Sirianni's yelling at people in the stands. And at that point, it looked like they're on the edge of collapse. And then since then, they become a bully. They beat people up. They win the Super Bowl. And now, we'll get to this a little bit later, but Sirianni says, we're not even coming out for the banner ceremony on Thursday. We are staying in the locker room. We're going to stay in the NFC East, actually, real quick here as well. Brian Daboll was cagey over the weekend. He didn't want to tell you who his number two quarterback was. And I know I've gone off on rants here in the last few weeks about what do depth charts actually mean. The regular season depth chart does carry a little more weight than any depth chart in July and August. And now Daboll's depth chart, unless PR made it, shows Jackson Dart, the rookie, as the number two quarterback. It goes back to my old point that Jameis Winston should have been traded and that they hold a valuable trade piece. But it also, Frank, I think proves my point as well, and you're in the same boat, that Jackson Dart is going to be starting sooner rather than later. And while we might not have thought that a month ago after watching him in the preseason, after watching Daboll's face contort when hiding his excitement on the sideline and on the podium, I think it's coming soon.
I do too. I really think it's probably going to be early October at the latest, maybe late September. Look, there is a scenario where Russ plays really well and he keeps the job a little longer than we think, but you got to know that they all want this. I don't know why Brian Daboll didn't pull the trigger necessarily, just start Jackson Dart week one, because now this is going to kind of follow them around. And, you know, like you said, it was pretty obvious how excited he was for this kid and how well he played. And I think that at first chance, they're going to go to that. And yes, the depth chart stuff is funny. I saw it in passing today that the Commanders listed Bill Kroski Merritt, a fourth string running back on their
fourth.
Whatever. This is, I don't know what Dan Quinn's doing, but these aren't contracts. Like, it doesn't matter necessarily, but I don't want to cherry pick, but I do think it matters that Jackson Dart was listed as the second guy. They're not making any bones about this. Jackson Dart's next in line. And yes, I do think we're going to see him pretty early in the season. You know what, Andrew? I think he's going to play really well. I didn't see anything in preseason that gives me any indication that he's not going to be a pretty good quarterback as a rookie. He has all the goods. I'm very excited to watch him play.
Yeah, I am as well. It's NFC East on NFC East in week number one. Not only do you have the Cowboys visiting the Eagles on Thursday, but you also have the Giants facing the Commanders. And I heard Dan Quinn today ask, when asked point blank, did Bill Merritt or Bill Kroski Merritt factor in your decision to trade Brian Robinson? He said yes. Meantime, up the road from where I currently sit in Los Angeles, the Chargers were on the practice field today before shipping off to Brazil this evening. They are scheduled to take off from LAX right around now, actually. But before they hopped on the plane, they listed Najee Harris as a full participant in practice. Color me skeptical here, Frank. I'm not accusing the Chargers of practice report shenanigans, but the idea that he is A, not only cleared for contact, but B, possibly playing after very conflicting reports on the severity of a 4th of July eye injury due to fireworks, I'm kind of stunned. If you're telling me the first time this guy gets hit this summer is in Brazil on a Friday night after a 4th of July fireworks accident, then you know what? I'll be stunned.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And I honestly, Andrew, I don't think it matters because I think Omarion Hampton is their dude. I know Najee Harris was brought in for veteran, whatever, whatever. You don't draft Omarion Hampton 22nd overall and say, we're going to split it up. I've never bought that narrative. The fireworks injury only kind of brought that along a lot quicker. I think Omarion Hampton has a good shot to win Rookie of the Year. I think he's going to have a monster season. Najee Harris is going to be a depth role, but we're talking about Najee, not Omari, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself here. Yes, I do. I am very skeptical, too, of Najee Harris's role right away. Like you said, he missed a long time in camp, preseason, all that kind of stuff. We'll see. We'll see where he's at conditioning-wise, but they're going to need him a little bit. I mean, Omarion's not going to get 35 carries or anything. You want him, you know, I mean, Najee's going to give you a good, solid 10 carries in this game, and that might be good enough to win this game if all goes well for the Chargers, but yeah, it doesn't matter. It's Omarion Hampton's world. The Chargers are going to load him up, and he is going to have a monster season.
All right, coming up next, as we look towards week one, there were other coaches on the podium today, like Nick Sirianni, like Mike Tomlin. What did those two Pennsylvania coaches have to say about their week one games, and what Sirianni had to say about the banner being raised to the rafters at the Link on Thursday? That is straight ahead. That's Frank. I'm Andrew. This is Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Let's get to the opening game here. Let's get to the game coming up on Thursday, the Cowboys and the Eagles. And let's get to the fact that Nick Sirianni is going to keep his team in the locker room, evidently, when everyone gathering at Lincoln Financial Field is there for the pregame ceremony.
Yeah, I didn't know it was banner night. We won't be out for that. We've had a good training camp. I think we had good OTAs. I think our habits are going in the right direction, and you focus on those things as you know, every practice that we go through, we're thinking about how did we tackle, how did we take care of the football, how did we take it away, you know, how did we catch it, how did we block. And so you're just looking for those to constantly be on the rise. And I think, you know, when you practice with the intensity that our team practices with, and you get that good on good work that we've gotten for so long, you know, our good offensive line is going against our good defensive line. You know, you have no choice but to get better. And so I feel good about that. You know, now we got to go do it. We got to let our habits take over in the game. You know, as coaches, we got to let our habits take over in the game as players. But I feel good about where we are right now. And this will be a really good test against a really good opponent.
I don't believe you, Nick. I don't believe you at all. The way that he dismissed that, the way that he didn't turn to PR and ask, oh, wait, hold on, they're doing something? I didn't know they're doing something. Look, this all goes back, Frank, to what to what Nick Sirianni has told his teams, what we talked about with Lane Johnson last week. We're not talking about repeat here. It's a new season, which I get. Like, I mean, that is how you have to look at it. There is no such thing as the reigning Super Bowl champion. This is the kickoff game because the team that wins it always gets to host the kickoff game, and they're going to have the celebration of the party and the retrospective and all that. But last year's wins don't matter. 2,005 yards a year ago from Saquon Barkley, that does not matter. But Sirianni playing dumb. I mean, come on. Who? Why are we doing this?
I know. And part of me gets it. I make fun of football coaches a lot because of the dumb things they do. And just come on. Like, we're all a little smarter than this. And to be, I didn't know there was a banner being. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Whatever. I get it from the aspect of, look, it's hard to repeat as Super Bowl champs. And number one on the list of why is complacency. You climb the mountain, and what's next? It's hard to climb the mountain again. And you've won. You're getting congratulated all off season. It's tough to just make it back. It's tough to stay motivated. It's tough to stay focused. I get all that. I get that you want to put this all in the past and just, hey, we're focused on this year. We're trying to win again. Cool. Great. It's also one of the bigger moments you're ever going to have ever for these players, coaches, the fans even there to see the banner unveiled. I get it. They've had the parade. They've had the ring ceremony. They've had times to celebrate this. I'd want my players to enjoy it. Hey, this is what we're playing for. Go look at how cool this is. Everybody's here to celebrate this banner being unveiled. So I kind of roll my eyes that we're going to stay in the locker room. We're not even participating in that. Why not? Like, this is cool, but I guess I get it. I don't know, Andrew, what side are you on here? I'm bouncing back and forth between like, okay, you don't want to get complacent and look at the banner being raised when you got to play the Dallas Cowboys in 20 minutes. But at the same time, it's okay to take a step back and say, you know what, it's a pretty cool moment for all of us.
Yeah, I think both can be true, to be honest with you. I think that you can take a moment to celebrate. You should be out there, and then you quickly turn your focus. I'm all for Nick Sirianni all throughout the offseason saying we're not repeating, we're starting anew, because that's the way you have to look at it. Mm-hmm. You must. Nothing conveys from last season. Lane Johnson even said last week, teams have an offseason of film on what the Eagles did offensively. They're going to have to adapt. They can't just run it down your throat. Or if they do, they're going to have to do it in new and creative ways. But at least enjoy the moment. And I don't know that you need the character on the podium. And I also think, and maybe this is part of it as well, while it is a divisional rival, you know, this is only the second time, I think. Let me look at this. Okay. This is only the second time in the last how many ever years in which the team invited to play the Thursday night kickoff opener against the Super Bowl champion is a team that had a losing record the year before. And you might not be surprised. In both instances, it's the Cowboys. So you have, I don't want to say a wounded Cowboys team, but a banged up Cowboys team without Micah Parsons and a rookie head coach opening on the road. Maybe that's part of Sirianni's thinking here, although the trade just happened with Micah. Maybe that's part of his thinking because he can't let his team overlook the Dallas Cowboys. And he also has a young team.
Absolutely.
Frank, this is the third. If you're taking the ages the day after cutdown day, so last Wednesday, this is the third youngest team in the NFL, which is hard to believe. So you could make the argument that they have an ascending team, a young ascending team, despite aging guys, let's say, like Lane Johnson or a long snapper in Charlie Hewlett.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, on that list of youngest teams, the Packers are number one, which is just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Two of the three teams in the top three are two of the three youngest teams in the NFL. But, and yes, it is a young team. And I think that's part of it with Sirianni, too, is he knows the Eagles understand that they're, maybe they don't know the specific point spread, but they're 8-point favorites in this game, which is one of the bigger spreads of week one. They're expected to go out there and demolish the Cowboys. The Cowboys are not an incapable football team. I don't care if Micah Parsons is not there. They still have a lot of good players. It's not like they're just going to roll over. Like, they're not just going to get beat by 35 points in this game. It's not a homecoming game in college, right? Like, it's still the Cowboys. You don't want them to overlook that. One thing I do want to add about the whole, you know, how tough it is to repeat and all that. The Eagles were never the hunted last year. We're going to have revisionist history about what we think about the Eagles and their place in history and all that. In December, I was sitting here. You can go back. There's receipts. The Sunday night shows with Fitz. I was saying, why aren't more people talking about the Eagles? The Eagles were strangely under the radar last year. I like to point out, they were never favored to win the Super Bowl. All season, when Super Bowl 59 kicked off, the Kansas City Chiefs were favored. Before that, the Eagles were never championship favorites. Everybody was waiting on the Chiefs to get their crown, or the Lions, or anybody else. So just that this is the first time the Eagles are going to be the hunted every single week. Who, you know, the Cowboys, we want to go in and beat the champs. You know, that they're going to get that for 17 straight games. That's hard. And that's a different role for the Eagles to play this year after being a little bit under the radar last year. So a lot of things, I understand that focus is a big issue for Sirianni this year. And this is all being displayed. And he does not want them to overlook the Cowboys and start 0-1. We saw that a few years ago. Patriots came out against the Chiefs. I remember Kareem Hunt had a monster game. It can happen. It can happen in week one where, hey, we're watching the banner. We're excited. We think we're never going to lose again. And then that visitor that's coming to your party comes in and crashes.
Yeah. And I'm with you on, I guess, the transformation of that team throughout the 2024 season. I saw them early in the year when they were coming off the bye, and the story the entire week coming off the bye, no, they weren't good. The story coming off the bye was, wow, did Sirianni and Jalen Hurts have a meeting that week during the bye? What did they say? Who initiated the meeting? Where did they go? Where was the meeting? What are the changes that are going to be made? And then they went out there, and honestly, the Browns should have beaten them. Doesn't matter. Yep. They didn't. The Eagles won. They were the better team that day. That was a day in which Myles Garrett again jumped over the line on a blocked field goal, and Rodney McLeod picked it up, a scoop and score going the other way. Brown should have won it. They didn't. But I left the building that day as Nick Sirianni is screaming at fans walking to the locker room, thinking this team is not good. Fast forward about 2 months, and I saw them on a Sunday night late in the season in Los Angeles, where they came into SoFi Stadium and bullied the Rams. They pushed them up and down the field. Saquon had like 200 yards. You remember that game. Dave Brandon Graham got hurt as well, right? Torres Peck, he made it back for the Super Bowl and then injured it again. But I stood there on the field during that game, and I went, wait a minute. This is not the team that I saw in October. They morphed, and maybe it's dedicating themselves to the run after the bye, whatever it is. They morphed from team that isn't that good with coach that was on the hot seat, if you listen to the radio in Philadelphia that week, to a Super Bowl bully that steamrolled to a championship. And that was a transformation that I don't think a lot of people saw coming.
No, I think they won 17 of the last 18 games. Like they went on a heck of a streak. But I think there's a bigger picture point here, Andrew, and I think you're going to agree with me. With so many teams sitting out all of the preseason, most of the preseason, September doesn't give you a clear picture of who's good or who's not. Even early October, we're still figuring this thing out. Then teams start to become who they are. Like some teams like the Lions are just good from beginning to end, right? Well, I guess not the end. They weren't very good against Commanders, but you could tell. But there's other teams, and the Patriots were kind of famous for this for a long time, that September, they weren't very good. They were still figuring out their playing time stuff and stuff they're going to be good at, not good at, whatever. They're using this almost as the preseason. And so you're going to see a lot of teams maybe struggle in September. We're going to be very good in December. Like that can happen. And that definitely happened with the Eagles. By the end of the season, they were a juggernaut. That was a very good football team. But the one you saw against Cleveland, the one the game before the bye against the Buccaneers, getting kind of housed by the Buccaneers, two totally different teams.
Let's talk about Mike Tomlin of the Steelers, who has a totally different quarterback again for seemingly, well, it happens every year to open up week one. I think it's 5 straight years. Last year, Justin Fields. This year, it's Aaron Rodgers on the road at Justin Fields. I beg your pardon. Last year, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. You get my point. Justin Fields week one. Russell Wilson also part of the equation once he got back from the hamstring injury. Anyway, I digress. Tomlin today said a couple of things. Number one, Derek Harmon, the first round pick, the defensive lineman out of Oregon, will not be able to go this week. You knew that one likely coming in. He avoided a season ending injury in that preseason primetime game. However, he is out for at least week number one. He also said that there is no doubt, Tomlin has no doubt, that Cam Hayward will play. Cam had a hold in for most of training camp. It wasn't nearly as notable, and it didn't get the headlines as the deal in Dallas with Micah Parsons, but Cam barely did anything. And there was at least a suggestion in the last few days that maybe he would sit out. Mike Tomlin, Frank, said that ain't gonna happen. He also said, when asked, has Aaron Rodgers intimated or let on what this game means to him going on the road facing the Jets, this team from the last 2 years? And he said, no, I'm sure it means something to him, and I'm paraphrasing, but he wouldn't tell me that, and he certainly wouldn't tell you that. And I got my favorite Mike Tomlinism so far of the new season, because if you watch Tuesdays with Tomlin at noon Eastern, which I do and I have done for years, you always get a new one for the post-it notes or for the Twitter. This one, when he was asked about last year's, said, I don't tote last year's bag. Frank, have you heard that one before?
I have not. That's really good.
I don't tote
I like that
last year's bag.
That's great. A few thoughts about the Steelers here. I believe him that Cam Hayward's going to be in the lineup. Cam Hayward is one of those dudes who I just talked about if holding in and August and blah, blah, blah. Cam Hayward's going to be Cam Hayward in week one, right? Like, he is so good. He is unbelievably good, a consummate professional. Not that, look, contract stuff is contract stuff, and I get it. Chris Jones sat out a couple years ago. Chris Jones is a consummate professional, too. Business is business. So But I do assume that Cam Hayward is going to play week one. I just have some issues with the Steelers coming into the year, and a lot of them do revolve around Aaron Rodgers and his age, and I've talked about this a lot, that there's only one quarterback who's been good at the age Aaron Rodgers is at, and that's Tom Brady. It doesn't mean Aaron Rodgers is going to be Tom Brady. It just might mean that Tom Brady's a freak, and we're never going to see a guy that old play that well quarterback again. And I think this Jets team's a little underrated. I really like Aaron Glenn, as we talked about before. I think there's a tough spot for the Steelers in week one. I'll be interested. If they come out and Justin Fields struggles against that defense, okay, I could see it. The Steelers are a really well-coached team, but I think there's a tough spot for the Steelers. I really do. You do have the Cam Hayward question lingering, and they are missing their first-round pick. You do have a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. I made fun of Charles before about no preseason stats. But, it might mean they get off to a little bit of a slow start. This is a game that I have circled as, hey, don't sleep on the Chiefs here, or don't sleep on the Jets here, because I think they have a real shot to pull off the upset.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. And Tomlin made the point, too, about Justin Fields. He's not your typical scrambling or running quarterback. He's a lot stronger than that. It's more like taking down a running back than it is taking down a quarterback who has some escapability, a word that is generally only used when describing a football player and rarely used in the normal lexicon. Escapability. Many of you have asked, where is Jory? We can tell you. We want to say congratulations to Jory and her husband, Simeon. They got married over the weekend. I was not there. Frank, you were not there. But I can tell you that Jory will be here reporting on football. I think she's actually going to be at the game in Philadelphia coming up on Thursday to kick off the season. So congratulations.
Congrats,
Hardy Mazel Tov.
Love that.
To Jory. That's going to do it for us. Coming up later this week, we're going to talk to Bills quarterback Josh Allen. We are back here, however, same time tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern time on yahoosports.tv or right here on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. That is Frank. My name is Andrew. Thank you for watching Inside Coverage. We'll see you tomorrow.